everybody, it's Michelle Fisher, and welcome into A View From My Window. As always, I thank you for joining us today. Today we are talking about the Arc of Indiana's Training Institute and Teaching Hotel, and now we are happy to announce that we officially have a name, the Erskine Green Training Institute. Many know Carl Erskine for his wonderful career as a baseball player for the Brooklyn and Los Angeles Dodgers and his banking career. Steve Green was Bobby Knight's first recruit at Indiana University and went on to enjoy a successful professional basketball career and has built a successful dental practice. While they were building their careers, they, along with their wives, have worked to make a significant impact in the lives of people with disabilities. In recognition of their efforts, it is the Arc of Indiana's honor to name the Training Institute after them. And it is my honor to interview them both today. Hello, gentlemen.
Oh, hello, Michelle.
It is so. I'm great. So great to have you here, and it's so great that we actually have a name for this training institute now. You both have children with Down syndrome. You both have been around people with disabilities for many years, and have advocated for people with disabilities for many years. Let's go back in history for a little bit. I want to know what it was like in the 50s. Or before that, when Jimmy was born, about the acceptance of people with disabilities. Talk about that for a second.
Yeah, well, of course, the first surprise we got was in the hospital when the diagnosis at that time was mongolism.
Really?
That's a harsh term.
It is.
It sort of reflects society's take on people with what now is medically called Down syndrome. So that sort of sets the stage for your answer to your question. There was much misunderstanding, maybe even superstition. Lots of things played into that over centuries.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, in Jimmy's lifetime, we've come full circle. We've made an about face and now recognize a person with Down syndrome is a person inside that's a beautiful make of God. So that was the climate there. But in this, out on the street, Jimmy's being Down syndrome was very recognizable.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a lot of standoffish feelings about this different looking person. And that had been happening for centuries. And over a very brief period, in terms of comparing centuries of misunderstanding, in Jimmy's lifetime, we've had this beautiful change of special education, Special Olympics. We've had workshops, special workshops, job placement, group homes. We've had infant stimulation, which was not even, nobody could spell it in those days, to start at birth for assisting some of the things that can be corrected or improved early.
Mm-hmm.
But in those years, doctors were hampered by advising a family with a newborn Down's child.
Mm-hmm.
There was no place to refer services. Zero.
Mm-hmm.
So the best advice in those days, you could put this little guy at a good facility, a nice institution, take well care of him.
Mm-hmm.
And here was the catchphrase, so it would not disrupt your family.
Oh, yes.
That was the take.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So now if you want to talk about a leap from then to now, we've certainly well past any of the taboos. We understand more about why Down syndrome happens with the genes and some of that study. The acceptance has been beautiful now to see that a Down person is celebrated.
Sure.
They're obviously as visibly the same as they were many years ago. But acceptance now has been so beautiful.
Now, let's talk about those perceptions you were talking about. Did you ever think when Jimmy was born that services for people with disabilities would ever get off the ground?
Well, when you start looking at it from the history's point of view, it took a long, long time. There were no resources, number one, for families, for parents. But almost in any instance when a child comes into the world, the parents who are like-minded in having that experience begin to say, what can we do?
Mm-hmm.
So most of these services started with parents who said, how can we do something for our children? Mm-hmm. And little by little, the legislatures of the world, and I give John Kennedy, as President of the United States, some credit for he did it deliberately without any fanfare. Mm-hmm. He has a sister, Rosemary, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. who has a disability. And in those days, it was kept very quiet, sure. and she was not up front ever. Mm-hmm. But John Kennedy, and later his sister, who started Special Olympics mm-hmm. herself, mm-hmm. They were motivated by their sister's needs. Mm-hmm. And so legislation started to creep into the picture. And eventually, we had mandatory special ed, and other kinds of services began to be legislated. Mm-hmm. And so the parents who kicked it off, and then I give the Kennedy family some credit in their powerful positions to push for benefits and more normal acceptance of people with handicaps. Mm-hmm. And so now we have a different world.
And that different world is a good thing, huh? Steve,
absolutely.
Let's talk about all these things that Carl is talking about. Mm-hmm. You have a beautiful daughter named Jessica. Mm-hmm. I've gotten to know Jessica personally through events that I've been to. She's gorgeous. Let's talk about how you feel as a parent as well, coming from the other side now, where we've come full circle. Talk about that and how it's impacted you.
Sure. Listening to Carl, I almost had this image of him handing me a baton to carry on, because it was on the shoulders of people like Carl and others that allowed Lana and I, my wife, mm-hmm. when Jessica was born, to have some place to go.
Sure.
And it was interesting that the way these things work out, Jessica was born in 1982, and at the time, Lana was working for a gentleman by the name of Dave Davis. Mm-hmm. Well, Dave helped start Noble of Indiana in 1953. He
wow.
was one of a few parents, and just like Carl was saying, parents yeah. had to start these
sure.
things. Well, she worked for Dave, and
wow.
Dave and Gail had a son who had Down syndrome.
Uh-huh.
And so
wow.
immediately, who was in our home was Dave, and mm-hmm. Gail came over and to talk to us mm-hmm. and to comfort us and to give us what we all were looking for. We didn't know it, but
yeah.
for hope,
yeah.
you know, some way to understand this when we really didn't. So we were very fortunate in that regard, and then also fortunate that by that time Noble was almost 30 years in,
mm-hmm.
and so Jessica was able to go to get attached with Noble in her first year, actually. And people, Irv Pika, Connie Dillman, are people that are dear to the Green family, and Marisa Manlove, who is still one of our best friends, and her husband Kim. Marisa was able to help Lana and Jessica and me through whatever we mm-hmm. needed help through at that time. And she got into what Carl was alluding to earlier. She got into infant stimulation programs.
Sure.
It was let's go.
Yeah.
We have something to do. So we had those things available to us because of others. And we've never lost sight of the fact that there were other people that paved the way.
Sure.
And that's been our, I think, our pledge to younger families and younger couples, that we were going to continue to do the same thing and pass that baton on, because we know what it was like,
sure.
and we know what it's like now.
Sure.
It's better.
Mm-hmm. Talk about though how you both thought, okay, we need to get our son and our daughter on the right foot so they have enough confidence to have a job, have a life. How do you do that? I mean, we're talking about programs, so the first step is the program. But how do you go ahead with what supplementally should be happening? You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I'll speak to the fact that, Lana and I knew we weren't professionals in
mm-hmm.
the field. And I'm sure Carl can speak to this too. But we could provide the, what we thought was the most important thing, was love mm-hmm. and support at home. And mm-hmm. and to treat Jessica as the firstborn as she was in our family. And if you ask Jessica today, that she's very proud of that. She's the oldest sister, and that's the way it is. That's the pecking order at our house, no matter yeah. what. And so anyway, we were able to provide that for her, and we were fortunate. I think Carl may understand this too, but we were fortunate to be able to make some phone calls too. And we know from our association for the State ARC and Noble that not everybody can do those things, and that's another reason that we've become involved and stayed involved, is to make sure everybody has the same kind of opportunity we had to provide for our for all of our children. To tell you the truth, it's mm-hmm. that's the way. We have three children, and we provided that. We want to provide that kind of thing for all of our kids, but it started with Jessica, and so anyway, that was what we provided too. That was love and support.
How about you, Carl?
Yeah, that is interesting that Steve and I have so much in common, a parallel life, except he is explaining what it's like to have a first child, and Jimmy was our fourth child.
Oh, my. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I had three healthy kids and all athletic, and then Jimmy comes into our life. And when they told Betty in the hospital that he could be institutionalized, she came up fighting and said, "You kidding? I carried this little guy 9 months. He's going home
sure.
with us." So I went home and set our three children down, Danny, 12, Gary, 10, and Susie, 5, I think. And I said, "You got a special little brother. He's going to come home, and you're going to have to help him. He won't be as quick to swim and ride his bike and some of the things maybe." But so that was the greatest speech I ever made. Okay. My kids were so fantastic. They were into sports. They brought their team members home. Jimmy was tossed around like any kid brother. And I think that was a sign of things to come, because that extended over into our neighborhood. So the neighborhood mm-hmm. kids all
sure.
knew Jimmy. They all played with Jimmy. And Jimmy would run off, and we'd have to go find him and chase him down and all. He was an energetic little guy. And interestingly enough, the opportunities came slowly, but that's what made it possible. People say to Betty and me, as I'm sure they say to Steve and his wife, "Oh, you've done a marvelous job with your son or daughter." And I say, "Why not? We're his mom and dad, mm-hmm. you know?" The big difference is society mm-hmm. has become inclusive, accepting, mm-hmm. and the opportunities have grown out of that. Now, I like to brag. Not about my baseball days, although I could, but I'm not. I brag about Jimmy. He's an athlete. This year, tomorrow, as a matter of fact, at Newcastle will be the regional games for Special Olympics. Jimmy will be participating for the 45th straight year.
Wow.
Jimmy started when he was 10. He's now 55. Mm-hmm. Jimmy also has a job.
He does.
At Applebee's Restaurant mm-hmm. in Anderson. He's been there 16 years.
Yes.
And the manager said to me one day when I complimented him for hiring some of the handicapped, he said, "Oh, don't worry about Jimmy." He said, "I tell my other helpers here, look, what's Jimmy? He doesn't smoke. He doesn't have a cell phone. He doesn't tell jokes. He just clocks in and goes to work."
Sure.
So, so what a life that has been for Jimmy, and not have to be apologized for or feel Jimmy is celebrated, and the people at Applebee's are Jimmy's limited. Two ways about Jimmy needs oversight to make sure he has a job coach,
sure.
but it all works, and it enhances his whole life, and in turn Special Olympics has, like my teammate Jackie Robinson, who broke the color barrier.
Yeah.
I watched him for 9 seasons.
Sure.
And there's a parallel sort of between what Jackie caused to happen with acceptance
sure.
and what special needs people. Mm-hmm. And Special Olympics, I always wonder this. Who gets the biggest charge when a gold medal is hung around a special athlete's neck? The athlete or the volunteer who's hanging the gold medal on the neck?
I think both, huh? I think both.
Absolutely both. But mm-hmm. it may even almost, in a way, the volunteer may get the best of the deal.
Yeah. Let's talk about Steve. There was a piece of research I did on you, and you said that one of the things, one of the calls you got when Jessica was born mm-hmm. was from Bobby Knight. Mm-hmm. And he said, don't focus on what she can do. Just focus on what she can. And in that amount of time, when it was so difficult, you had this little girl with this diagnosis. How did that call help you to move forward, help you to kind of allay your fears, change your perspective? Tell me about that.
Sure. Carl was talking about Jimmy being the fourth child in the family, and as he alluded to, that Jessica was our first, so this was about the first child. It was a lot of emotions there, that's for sure. But it was interesting, when Jessica was born, my mother and father lived here in Indianapolis and within two blocks of the hospital. Mm-hmm. And that's, I left that that night that Jessica was born, and she was with Lana, and I went to see my mom and dad, and I was lost. This was not something that, you know, there's no expectation of anything mm-hmm. other than, you know, firstborn child, and we're going to celebrate. Now, what do I do? So I was in a little different position. And that's when the phone did ring, and it was Coach Knight, and my father had already talked to him once earlier that night, so we had a talk about that, and talk about, you know, what truly is important, mm-hmm. what truly is not to look too far ahead, to take matters into your hands, what can you control, what can't sure. you control, that kind of thing, the same kind of thing sure. that we used to talk about. You know, before a big game, and mm-hmm. what are the things? Are we prepared? You know, if we're not, then how do we prepare? And so it just put me in a little different mindset. But it also, in a bigger picture, I knew I was supported.
Sure.
And that's something that I wanted to make sure Jessica knew, too. You know, and then we had Casey, child number two, and Michael, child number three. And I was with Coach Knight a couple years after Michael was born, and we were just talking about the kids. And he said, you know, tell me about him. And, you know, was telling about Jessica, and of course, and Casey and Michael. And he said, so all three. And I said, well, you know, Lana and I had planned on two. And when we got to that point, we really did think consciously about having a third child and having another advocate for Jessica.
Sure.
I mean, that was part of our plan. Sure. And he was talking about, he thought that was a wonderful, you know, thing to do,
sure.
you know, to think about your daughter in that way. But it was, and, you know, it's interesting for, you know, those times that we felt a little sorry for ourselves early on, like, you know, maybe mm-hmm. things, you know, Michael Green wouldn't be here if not for Jessica
yeah.
Green. It's interesting kind of dynamic, you know,
yeah.
to that. And guess who are the two biggest fans of Jessica Green? It's Casey Green and Michael Green. You know, and Casey Green, Earhart now.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
And because, well, I mentioned that because we have a granddaughter, Kimmy, but of course that's Jessica is the aunt
sure.
and takes that very seriously.
Sure.
And so we have this wonderful supportive family. And my two children, I'm sure like Carl's children, the brothers and sister of Jimmy, made their friends more aware. I mean,
sure.
and not make them although sometimes they did make them, you know,
sure.
in a gruff kind of way, but it was, hey, this is the way it is.
Yeah.
And we treat people fairly, all people fairly,
mm-hmm.
and I'm so proud of all three of them, very honestly, but the wonderful human beings that my kids have become.
That's great.
And part of that is what Jessica has taught us, as Carl was saying, that hey, let me lead you. And you know, there are times that Jessica's picked me up, you know, when
yeah.
I've been down about something else. But
yeah.
Jess is like, hey, you know, come on, let's go see a movie.
Come on, Dad.
Hey, man, that's a good idea.
That's awesome. Yeah, anyway. That's great. Let's talk about this training institute for a second. Because, you know, through your life experience, you've dealt with this. You've passed your experience on to other people. Now we have a training institute that is named after the two of you, which you go through your life thinking, okay, my accomplishments you know, you're thinking, okay, my accomplishments are my accomplishments, and I don't ever think that my name's going to be on a training institute. But how does it make you both feel that the disability community is saying, your work is so impactful for other families who are dealing with the same uncertainty, and how is my child going to survive and succeed? How does it make you feel that this is here now for people with disabilities everywhere? You guys can, yeah.
Yeah, of course, of all, you don't expect buildings to be named for you at all. But I kind of relate it to baseball. People always say to me, don't you wish you were playing in the era of the big money and making all that money? Well, I'd like to make money. But what I do is look back at the players who played in the early 1900s, the 20s, and the 30s, who set the table for me when I got to the big leagues. The league was solid. The stands were filled. I got to do my thing. Now, in the sense of special needs people, same thing. I look at this institute as a result of the people who went before me, Steve. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the baton. I knew families who had handicapped children who tried and tried for services without any success. Mm-hmm. But they broke some ground. They got some things started. They got some ideas placed. They got some needs known. Mm-hmm. And those then eventually blossomed into the early services. But there were no staffs, there were no accreditations for special needs service people. Mm-hmm. Like there were no courses in school, there were no degrees for special ed and so on. So that all had to take place.
Yeah.
People before me and Betty, I'm beholden to that early, and then we're talking about centuries now. We're not talking about a few years. That just went on all over the world. I don't take much credit for having a building named, but the institute is new ground. Mm-hmm. It's new groundbreaking. It's a training, but it's more professionally staffed for a specific industry, and it's just exciting. Now it is in the early stages. It has to prove itself, but the main thing is it's off the ground. My buddy Jackie Robinson was the first black player. Well, what he did started a momentum that is still rolling through society. Mm-hmm. What's happened in the special needs field is the same kind of thing. Mm-hmm. There is a momentum now,
sure.
And it's rolling. And young people especially don't have hang-ups like people my age might
no.
have said, oh, you know, you wouldn't want to. Well, you got to be careful with that guy. He looks different. They don't do that anymore. Young
yeah.
people are more inclusive, accepting,
yeah.
and so it's a beautiful time. But it took the momentum to get started.
It sure did.
So anyway, that's kind of my take on the institute. I'm thrilled to death to know it's here, regardless of what it's called.
I'm thrilled for you. I'm very thrilled. And Steve, let's talk about how this training. Like Carl was saying, these are real jobs. This is real
sure.
training for the real world. So what do you feel is the outlook for employment for people with disabilities with this training institute in place?
Well, Michelle, first, as Carl said, too, I'm humbled by the ARC and the people associated with the institute and asking for Carl and I for the privilege of, you know, it's our privilege, our honor to put our name on that, and I do it, and he does it with all of those friends, families that have come before us, that some that are no longer here, that have were so important in getting this momentum going, and I alluded to Dave Davis earlier. In helping start Noble, and just what that would have. You know, what that would mean to him, you know, to know that we're at that point. I'm anxious for the Institute to hopefully prepare a number of folks with disabilities for employment in the way that maybe some of us parents have had to go out and find, you know, mm-hmm. jobs in some fashion or another. Hopefully it's going to be more accepted,
yeah.
more people are going to be employed because, as Carl said about and I've always thought about Jessica as a taxpayer. You know, that's it's a wonderful thing. She wants to work. She loves working. Mm-hmm. She's had a number of jobs and plus volunteer work, and mm-hmm. so she's kind of that model citizen. You know, that's mm-hmm. what we want, and she sure. pays her taxes, and we, you know, all those kinds of things. Well, now we're going to have the opportunity for who knows how many people are going to go through the Institute. We don't know. It's at this moment. You know, we don't know where it will go. I will tell you this: in my lifetime, I've underestimated the community that sure. we're a part of. They always outdo whatever expectation I might have on on something like the Institute, something like the Ark. They're always exceeding anything that I could dream of. So that's a wonderful thing. I think it's, you know, going to be wonderful for us.
Well, you know what? I think you guys are wonderful. And I thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedules today to talk about this. And I'm so excited. There are good times to come. And Steve Green and Carl Erskine, thank you guys so much.
Well, thank you, Michelle. And, you know, the R in ARC now stands for remarkable.
All right.
Thanks, Michelle.
You are so welcome. And thank you to my listeners today, everybody. Have a great day today. Bye-bye.